Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Tom and Lotus as usual, and we are digging into even more Daggerfall books and lore, things that show up in the series in the very second game in the series that have influenced and potentially changed between different games and how things have evolved since then. But we found three different books this week that are particularly interesting. The first, because it connects to ESO, they kind of pulled something back, and it's one of the earliest mentions of Boethia in a book in the game, which is pretty cool. And then two others, one very much of its time and another one that feels like it was predictive of the Elder Scrolls Oblivion. So this will be really cool stuff. Lotus, how's it going? Welcome back.
It's going good. It's going good. I'm kind of interested to, I mean, this time we've got a few books that we're hoping to tackle, which would be interesting, but like the story, we've been kind of trading back and forth who's grabbing the story type of thing. And this one specifically, I thought it was kind of neat because it ties into, well, ESO, but sort of something that is only referenced again this one time, and then ESO digs it up as something that we see, but we never really ever interact with it. It's sort of just a fairy tale, which is interesting.
It's a myth, and even ESO treats it kind of like a myth, like it's not a real thing. It mentions an artifact, and we'll get into that, but there's an artifact in the story, which sounds really cool, but then the story also talks about how, well, it's not around anymore, and ESO plays tribute to that.
Yeah, and to be fair, when I saw this in the ESO, I guess, store originally, it didn't even dawn on me. And it's kind of funny because, like, I don't think it even clicked with me. We'll get into exactly what we're talking about instead of being vague.
Right. But you didn't realize, like, right off the bat.
I didn't even know what this was something.
Yeah.
I was just like, well, okay, whatever. It's just something. And then I was like, oh, I was like, this is, I didn't realize that that's what that even was.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into it. I'm sure people are wondering, okay, what are they even talking about here?
Why stop toying with us?
This is the story of Lysirius. That's the name of it. Lysirius is Lysirius. It feels like a kind of an imperial name. And this first shows up in Daggerfall, like all the stories that we've been talking about recently. The in-game author's name is Bresne Smith, Smythe. Feels, I don't know, Breton to me?
It sounds Bretonish, maybe not French enough to be Breton.
Look, yeah,
for some reason they all have very French names.
Right, Smythe feels kind of English, but
yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It's Eastern European, that works.
Sure, sure. And we don't know who actually wrote this. There's no note of who the actual real-world author is. Ted Peterson tends to be one of the ones that keeps coming up in these early books.
Right,
we don't really know
a lot of the books.
Yeah, so here, let's get into it. I'll read through it, and Lotus is going to chime in with some fun details as we go. And each of these stories isn't particularly long. This one starts out in ancient times, so it starts already like it's a fairy tale. There lived a hero named Lysirius. He fought against the Akaviri slave traders. Already in Daggerfall, we are having mention of the Akaviri and the fact that they are evil people because they, I'm putting this in quotes, not because slave trading isn't evil, but because this is a story that is very clearly setting us up to believe a certain thing about a specific group of people. It feels already like propaganda, like it's coming from a specific perspective, right?
Correct. You've got the whole xenophobia thing. It's like, oh, it's the Akaviri. They're coming to get us type of deal, which is, you know, very heavy and like, oh, well, it's us versus them.
Right, right. So the Akaviri slave traders and single-handedly slew hundreds. This individual slew hundreds of Akaviri.
With only one hand.
With only one hand. Despite his valor, Lycerius's army was routed and scattered to the four winds. Lycerius fled into the moors to escape the Achaveri chariots. It mentions moors here. I'm not sure what the moors are. That could be, I mean, there's a few moorish places on the map, but I don't know where specifically this is.
Right. I was going to say maybe Glenumbra area type of thing, because that is Bretonish type of thing, if we're to go with that. So, it could be anywhere along there, but who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, these early stories don't necessarily point to a very specific established place necessarily.
Exactly. They might not have actually ironed out those details just yet.
Right. And we've got more details like that. Far from the lands of men, Lycerius entered the blasted lands. Any idea where the blasted lands are?
I was going to say, so that at that point, it sounds like we're dealing with like Vardenfell or something like that, maybe volcanic area. Like, okay, like it's known for being kind of like harsh and beat up over there. So it's like, if you get blasted lands, my first thought was Vardenfell or Stone Falls, you know, Dashan, one of those, the Morrowind area.
Yeah. Dashan kind of popped in my head too, because it isn't, it's still kind of volcanic without being like a mountain. So, maybe like Dunmer lands. So therefore it's not the lands of men. That would make sense. At the heart of this forsaken landscape, he met the Worm, W-Y-R-M. Worm is usually one of those words that's kind of synonymous with dragon. I've looked into the history of this in the Lord of the Rings lore cast, and it turns out that worm was more common historically up until about, I don't know, the Middle Ages, and then dragon started showing up more, especially in like English and Western European literature. So they're making kind of a reference to a worm here being probably a dragon.
Yeah, that would make sense, especially because we actually, good Lord, it's probably 5 years ago now, we had an entire episode where we devolved into wyverns and worms and dragons on tails, where we were discussing how many claws it's got to make it each thing is like
right. Sort how of many are how many legs and how many wings are
and how many appendages and like what are the dragons in Skyrim actually wyverns and jokes like that. So it's like.
Yep. So here's a worm. The great scaly beast mocked the mighty blows of Lycerius's enchanted spear. It melted the shield fear-struck, gift of the Daedra Boethia, with a single blast of its fiery breath. Lycerius, seeing that he could not defeat the creature by force of arms, surrendered. So this is the artifact you were talking about.
Yeah. Which, again, when you think of Boethia's artifacts, this isn't one that really ever comes about, and we'll find out that it's sort of because it's one and done and they don't even say what it does.
Right. I mean, it's a shield, so we know it's a shield. But it's and it's like, called fear struck. Shields you generally don't think as being the kinds of things that elicit fear in an enemy so much as like a sword or a spear or a club or you know something you're going to bash somebody
like,
with.
So doesn't really, I mean, I guess maybe it could be reflecting, like if it's got reflect on it, because if you're throwing spells at it, it would reflect it back and then striking you with fear, like that could be something like that, but they don't really go into it. And as you'll quickly learn that this is it, this is all you get, it's just reference of it, and it's never talked about again.
And that's it. I have to wonder, fear struck makes me think maybe when it takes a blow, it releases some sort of spell that discourages, that breaks the morality or fears. Right,
like actually cast fear. It
casts fear. Yeah.
Cast fear. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of potentials, but it's kind of funny that it's just like, yep. So he's got this, you know, enchanted shield called fear struck and they melted it.
Well, you're getting ahead of us, but well, I guess with single blast of its fiery breath, that's where it happens.
It's just kind of like, well, I guess it doesn't even say that it's melted, it's toast, whatever happened with it. It's just
right,
like,
it doesn't work on a worm. But it fear struck kind of makes sense for Boethia as a Daedra.
Without a doubt, very on brand, like sounding as well.
Early in the story, absolutely, in the game series.
And even though we're talking about how it's basically just eviscerated this fight and never spoken of again, it is in something we will discuss later, which is kind of cool on its just design.
Right. So the story goes on. The worm intended to devour Lycerius when the hero offered to be its slave and manservant. We got that theme of slavery coming back up. Ever prideful, the worm agreed. Seeing that the worm was vulnerable to conceit, Lysirius spoke, "O great worm, for my first service, I beg that you allow me to polish your one tarnished scale." And this is where it starts to feel like, I don't know, a fairy tale, like a Grimm's fairy tale or a Greek myth. This has kind of the trappings of a Greek myth.
Yep.
Indeed.
It's got the...
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just, I was going to say, it's just got the one trope. It's like, oh, well, you have one tarnished scale. Let me just work on that one for you. It's like, oh, yeah, all right. It's very convenient. Let's work our way into getting a scenario going where we can take advantage here.
Yeah, it also feels like a reference to Smaug in The Hobbit, mm-hmm. missing a scale. There's only one scale that's different from the others because it's gone.
Right. And it's going to say it's the parallels to The Lord of the Rings are... let's just say not subtle in the first two games.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, so he says, okay, let me polish this one tarnished scale. Indeed, centered between the great wings of the creature was a dull scale, clearly out of the reach of its long neck. So it's on the back instead of on the stomach, like the way Smaug's was. Its vanity was such that it was immediately lowered one wing for Lysirius to climb upon. Somebody's going to go, well, actually, it was more of the chest than the stomach, but you know what I mean, the underside. I'm going to get a well, actually, from that. So he can't reach it, so that's why it's tarnished, because he can't clean himself there. But it also becomes a place where he can't reach, so he's kind of vulnerable at the same time. And then it continues. Once astride the great lizard, Lysirius slid his dagger underneath the scale and into the tender flesh of the beast. Though it spun and twisted in all directions, the worm could not get at the hero. Finally, it took to the air. Lysirius clung to the neck with all his strength as the worm banked, rolled, and dove. This is an exciting scene. This feels like some of the... I mean, you can't really do this in Skyrim, but the idea of flying on a dragon eventually became a thing you could do in the series.
It did, and it's not the same series, so a little out of lore for this series. For anybody who's played Dragon's Dogma, it actually reminds me a lot of the fights in that.
Yeah, where you climb all over the monsters. Yeah, and
you literally climb the monsters mm-hmm. and you like dismantle them like that. I always thought that was a really cool feature of that game, and kind of did the dragon thing better than the way Skyrim's dragon thing was, because it was definitely clunky. It was fun to an extent, but it was definitely clunky. Whereas, granted, that was like one of Dragon's Dogma's main gameplay gimmicks, so they put a lot of time and effort into making that the thing, but it just reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah, and Skyrim was before Dragon's Dogma 1. There's already been a second one where they made that even better, so mm-hmm. you can kind of see the progression of inspiration across many different games. So here, the story goes on, though. Seeing that Lysirius could not be shaken free, the worm demanded that he remove the stinging blade. Lysirius answered, "Fly straight on until you see a great army. Destroy that army, and I will remove my blade." So he's using this as like a manipulation tool to get what he wants from the dragon.
It's like a steering wheel.
Like he's using it like steering like a joystick.
Like a joystick, yeah.
That way, no, that way. With a great roar, the scaled creature set off. The Akaviri army had no chance against the fire-breathing beast. They had never plagued Tamriel since. So I guess this was the end of the Akaviri invasion, and this is what caused it to finish?
This is how it ended. Listen, this is just literally serious, just... one dragon just remote controlled him right in and blew them all up.
It's fun as like a myth, but I feel like it's one of those things that like doesn't really stand up on historical scrutiny, especially much later as things get more fleshed out.
The likelihood that this is actually how it played out is slim.
I have done as you bid, he says to the worm. Now sheath your stinger. Oh, the worm says, I've done as you bid. Now sheath your stinger, roared the worm. My bad. Knowing that he would be devoured or worse, Lysirius pulled the blade and then leapt from the back of the worm, of the flying worm. Indeed, the foul monster had intended to slay the hero. Of course, right? The worm pursued the plummeting Lysirius. Boethia appeared beside our falling hero, praising him for ultimately destroying the army of Akavir. She turned him into a raven. Lysirius quickly lost the worm in the clouds. This is interesting. The fact that Boethia is like, even though the shield is gone, Boethia is still there going like, yes, good, good. You murdered all of them.
I was going to say, she does love her murder with it's, you know, got a purpose, and it's just like, oh yeah, no, great, you just blew up all of them. It's just like, that's that's 500 points. 500 yeah. points.
Yeah, yeah, almost like she's playing with toys, and she's like, oh good, my little army over here came, it was gonna get away with beating all the Imperials or whatever, but then you brought the dragon in and you destroyed all of them. Wonderful, wonderful. Like, like setting up
extra resourceful.
Yeah, like one of those games where like the battlefield simulator, you set it up and it plays out and like everything gets mauled and blown up and you're like, yes, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's just like she's in it for the carnage.
Right, right. Then the story ends. Legend has it that the worm still lives. Though this happened in the first era, long, long ago, the dragon nurses a grudge against Lysirius and all of his kind. It is never vowed again to trust two-legged bearers of weapons. So he still has a grudge against humans, but not necessarily ravens, because he turns into a raven and gets away.
Yes, which is like, well, I guess that's not him anymore.
Yeah, yeah. There's a scholar note at the end. It says, if this legend has a basis in fact, the artifact Fearstruck was utterly destroyed. No other reference to it has ever been found. So this is the thing that plays into ESO, right? Because you don't you can't actually get Fearstruck as an item. It doesn't show up in a game as like an enchanted weapon or armor or anything like any of those kinds of things that often do show up in the games. So what is it in ESO?
In ESO, Fearstruck is basically a replica of the shield, which is interesting. And it looks like if you go to the UESP, for example, you can look it up and the shield is basically Boethia's fist with the snakes going around it. It's very Boethia. But that's just it. It's a replica. It's just like a shield skin.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
interesting because, like, that's a weird. ESO does a lot of deep cuts. That's a pretty weird deep cut.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's also why the ESO team is cool. We bring this up all the time. And as we've digged deeper into the lore of Daggerfall and these stories, more and more of these little pieces show back up. And then we go, oh, wait, the ESO did a thing with that. They didn't just leave it. Now, not all the time, but often enough that we're impressed that these things kind of show back up.
Right. And sometimes it's even just something as simple as this, where it's just a little reference like, oh, hey, remember this one offshoot book to a story in The Elder Scrolls II Daggerfall?
Yeah.
Well, we're just going to bring that back for a cosmetic. It's like, those are the little ESO touches that I personally really, really enjoy.
Yeah, and it makes sense for that time period in the second era to have had this myth from the first era that a lot of people would know and to be able to reference that. But it's also weird that this is supposedly the end of the Akaviri invasion, where it clearly did not end in the first age. When you think about the histories, like that's not really how that works. But
yeah, they hadn't fleshed out the Akaviri, I don't think, all that much in Daggerfall.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, the Akaviri invasion goes well into the second era, and some of them actually ended up as like emperors at one point.
Yeah. Potentates and all sorts of stuff.
Potentates. Yeah. All sorts of weird things. So, but yeah, clearly it's a myth. It's an early myth, and there are enough pieces here that kind of continue on and that, you know, makes it interesting. So this is a really cool one. Any other thoughts on this one before we move on to the next one?
I just kind of love when, like, sometimes if you go back and listen to the Boethia episode, I'm curious because we probably just glossed over Fearstruck because, again, I didn't even know anything about it until I stumbled upon this story. And I had mentioned to you that, like, in ESO, I didn't even know what it was. I just thought it was just a random cosmetic. I didn't put any thought into it. And it's like, oh, it ties into this very abstract little tale from a game, you know, second in the series. It's wild. I love when they do that. And it's like, even when they, I guess I wouldn't necessarily call it retconning, but when they make their own adjustments, you can call it whatever you want, to the series, I love that they sometimes even still throw a nod back to their old games. They never really forget some of the stuff, even when they kind of need to change something.
Even when things are of a time and place, which leads us to our second story. So you pulled up that first one and you're like, hey, check this out. It has this reference to this artifact. Isn't this really cool? Boethia's in it. And I was like, yeah, this is great. This is another one of those stories that I hadn't read before. And I was like, okay, this is really cool that we're digging this back up. There's one that I found in doing some research. And I was like, hey, Lotus, why don't we talk about this one? It is called The Healer's Tale. You may have heard this one before. It's on the sillier side. And you'll understand by the time we get to the end of it why it is absolutely of a time and place. It's if you look up the Imperial Library website that has all of these books linked, we usually use the UESP, but oftentimes I'll go to the Imperial Library because sometimes they have notes the USB doesn't. We've mentioned that before.
Never limit yourself to one source.
Absolutely. And this is categorized in the jokes and riddles section of the Imperial Library. And we don't know who the in-game author is, but we do know that this was written by Ted Peterson in the real world. So this is another reference to Ted Peterson. And if you go back and listen to last week's episode, you know that sometimes Ted Peterson writes some really silly stuff. This is the healer's tale. This is how it goes. For over
90s AF.
For over 20 years, I have been a healer at the Temple of Stendar. And you're like, okay, cool. Temple of Stendar, one of the Aedra, one of the Divines, right? As the reader is doubtless aware, we are the only temple in the Iliac Bay that offers wound healing and illness curing for both the faithful and the heathen alike. For Stendar is a god of mercy. Okay, so cool. Like, they take care of everybody. I have faced people at their most miserable and their most terrified. I have seen brave knights sweep and strong peasants scream. I like to think that I've watched the mask drop from faces and seen people as they truly are. The whole idea of like somebody, like either when somebody is truly wounded or at their wit's end, that's when they truly reveal themselves, or when they're drunk. That's kind of another one of those things. But it makes sense, right? You're most vulnerable. You're not going to fake anything anymore. You're going to be who you really are.
Yeah. Your guard is down.
Right. A healer's job, after all, is more than simply binding wounds and stopping the flows of poison and disease. We are counselors and comforters for those who have given up all hope. Sometimes it seems like our kind words and sympathy do more for our patients than our spells. Well, that's a nice sentiment, right? Like they don't just heal with magic or potions. They heal with their words and with their kindness and their consideration for others.
Yeah, big old hugs.
Big old verbal hugs. It goes on. I am reminded of a very sick young man who came to the temple. So now we're getting an example of how they do this, right? Suffering from a variety of maladies. Once I had given him an examination, I told him the results, careful not to alarm him. I let him decide how he wanted to be told the news. I have some good news and some bad news, my child, I said. I better hear the bad news first, he said. This is a typical thing, right? Like oftentimes if you tell somebody I've got good news and bad news, they'll get the bad news out of the way and then I can deal with it. Well, I said, gripping his shoulder in case he should faint, the bad news is that unless I am wrong, you will sicken even more over the next day or two. And unless Stendar chooses to be merciful to you, you will pass from this existence. I am sorry, my child. Now, in that moment, I'm sure any of us would hope that Stendar chooses to be merciful, but we know the Aedra, we know the Divines. They don't always, in fact, they very rarely reach in.
They're not prone to showing up when it's needed.
No. This is a very common thing in the series. So in the rare chance Stendar does actually show up and do something, maybe he'll save you. But outside of that, I'm so sorry for you. Then we get, as soft as the blow was, it stung nonetheless. The boy was, after all, very young. He thought he had his whole life ahead of him. Tears streaming down his face, he asked, "And what is the good news?" I smiled. "When you came in, did you notice the prosthetizer? She was the enchanting, voluptuous blonde in the antechamber, I'm messing up my words, by the foyer." Color returned to the young man's face. He had noticed her indeed. "Yes, I'm sleeping with her," I said. What? If more of the healers of Tamriel would consider their patients' feelings, not just the quickest way to heal them up and get them out, we would have a far, far better, healthier society. I truly believe that. So the joke here is that the good news is only good news for him because he's hooking up with the hot lady at the front of the office.
Apparently.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Lotus?
I love that. It seems like such a not in lore book, which is so funny because it's one of the deepest lore books when you think about it, because it's dating back to the beginning of the series.
Yeah, it goes way back, and it's really just a joke. It's just written like it's a joke. And on top of it, the very like of its time thing, you know, the whole 90s thing of like, talking about the woman as being voluptuous and blonde and totally what's it called when you would turn some materializing her, but that's not the right word, where you're
but I was gonna say
objectifying. Well, that's the word. You're objectifying
her. That's super like how the series was originally. Most people didn't want to wear tops or bottoms or whatever. It's just like you can definitely tell that they've tried to make the series more accessible going forward.
Yes. But from a lore perspective, what does this tell us? It absolutely still is in line with the idea of Stendar and the Divines not being particularly active at the thing they're supposed to be doing in the world, being merciful and healing in this case. And the idea that whoever the doctor is just like, yeah, well, at least I've got good news for me. That should make you feel better.
My life's pretty sweet, right?
Yeah, right. So there you go. That's the healer's tale, and another one of those weird stories from back in the lore. But we do have one more story for you. We're not going to leave you hanging with just that, as offensive as it could be. This one is interesting. Okay, so this is the shortest document that you get as a book in Daggerfall. There are clearly like signs on things and short messages and stuff, but this is the shortest document that I can find.
Right. I was going to say, not including like a street sign or like a door sign.
Right. Or just like a quick little note. Sometimes there's like tiny little notes, but this one is called Bothdorgi Scroll. This is a scroll. We don't know who the in-game author is. We don't know who wrote this, but it did make its way into the game. And it's not a scroll like it casts a spell, so much as it's, I don't know, well, I'll read it and then you'll understand. But it does mention Oblivion, the Veil of Oblivion. And then later on, the Day of Oblivion is indeed at hand is something it brings up, which to me feels like an absolute reference to the idea that, and we've talked about this before, by the time Daggerfall came, and especially the period between Daggerfall and Morrowind, the team at Bethesda, even though they were small, they were only like 20-something people, had already fleshed out a lot of where they wanted the future of the series to go. And that included Morrowind, that included Oblivion, that included parts of Skyrim, and probably some things that are going to show up in Elder Scrolls 6. They already storyboarded a lot of this stuff. And yeah, some of the details have changed, some of the lore has changed, but they had kind of a general sense of what eventually would be decades worth of the continuation of the game, which is mind-blowing when you think about it.
It is, and oftentimes you will actually see these like, I don't know what you call them, like signpost markers, and you just don't know they're there until you uncover the next game. Like, you know, Oblivion was the fourth in the series, was like part of an FMV of the books coming off a shelf, and I believe it was Redguard or something like that, or could have been Daggerfall. I forget which FMV.
Yeah, it might have been Redguard. I could be wrong, but it might be Redguard.
Yeah. But somebody can correct me if I'm off on which game it was, but like they're planned out. And sometimes we just don't know what's planned until we already have it. And then you look back and you're like, oh, this has been here this whole time.
Yes. So here, let's get through the scroll, and we're going to try and take this apart. It is kind of cryptic, so bear with me. Breath, candent smoke on the Veil of Oblivion. Now, candent is C-A-N-D-E-N-T. It's not candent. Breath, candent smoke on the Veil of Oblivion. Okay, the Veil of Oblivion, we're thinking like the realm, you know, out there, beyond Nirn, like out in the realm of Oblivion, not necessarily just, you know, Mehrunes Dagon's realm, but kind of Oblivion at large, right? Enforce the line dispelled. Awaken the sleepless, unquiet princes. Okay, so let's pause there. Awaken the sleepless, unquiet princes. That's got to be the Daedric princes. This seems like it's almost a scroll that's willing into existence a Daedric invasion or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. That's the way it sounds.
Continues on. Portal opening, maybe. Something like that. And bid their standing servants rise. That sounds like bring their Daedric armies out.
Right. Yeah.
It is the night when frost will burn. When frost will burn. What would burn frost? Well, maybe Daedric portals to Oblivion showing up in frosty areas like the north of Tamriel.
Yeah. feel in Oblivion yet?
Yeah, does this feel like Oblivion? When flame will freeze the lamplit lake. When flame will freeze the lamplit lake. I'm not sure what that means. And with any of this stuff, Lotus and I are, we've spent years now going over the lore, but that doesn't mean that we don't forget things or that sometimes a reference is about something else that we just couldn't find. So if any of this stuff rings a bell with you and you go, oh no, this is probably what this is, please comment, jump on the Discord, let us know what you think about this. Cause this is interesting in how prescient it is about the future of the series.
And sometimes some of the stuff that's been thrown our way is like, ooh, that's actually like, either I hadn't considered that, or, oh, you know, that's just something that's like, yep, nope, that totally makes sense. Or it had been a book or some piece of the series I hadn't considered.
Yeah. And there is a possibility that these are just fancy sounding words and combinations of words that sound really cool together. Right. And that's just what it was.
Flowery.
Right. It could just be very flowery and just kind of like, oh, this is how people were speaking when they wrote this scroll and they were trying to summon the forces of Oblivion or something like that. But that doesn't mean that they don't later then take this as some sort of reference that showed up in like a side quest in Oblivion or something. And I just can't, it doesn't come to mind right away. So the flame will freeze the lamplit lake. When clouds of bats devour clouds of birds.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
That feels like Daedric monsters attacking regular creatures to me.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly. Creatures of the night attacking just like the regular folk.
Yeah. Yeah. When boils and sores afflict the rich. I can't. Clearly, there's disease. There have been plagues in the series, all of that. But I can't think of a specific plague that afflicts only the wealthy.
Unless they're just kind of naming off Daedric Prince.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, with the bats devouring birds, we could have that be related to the vampirism thing, which would be Molag Paul. And then we just made reference to Periite. We've already had reference to Mehrunes Stagon. Like, maybe they're just kind of referencing different Daedric princes.
That's true. This might be a series of, like, ways to will each of the Daedric princes into coming to Nirn or Tamriel or a specific place where this scroll was being written or recited, maybe. Could be something like that. The next sentence says, when a boy with wings doth curse the land, that feels like a vampire, a boy with wings.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else that references to outside of vampires. So I don't really know there.
Yeah, that one I don't, because that's one of the big ones that I had no reference point that I could.
Yeah. So the next sentence, if knowing lies fester on my tongue and such winds are but whispers in the night, if knowing lies fester on my tongue and such winds are but whispers in the night. It feels very poetic, but again, I'm not particularly clear on what this means.
Well, so my thought with this one, because this one I had a theory on, like, you don't know necessarily what's true and what isn't, but the part about like what winds may lie, it's like basically when this timeline of events might come about is kind of what my thought was, because there's so much conflicting stuff in the series. We don't oftentimes have a clear direction on who's telling the truth. So it's like, maybe it's one of these things of like, you know, it's coming, but when is the thing coming type of deal. That was my thought when I read it.
Yeah. Okay. That tracks. Now the last three sentences, they feel like these go together. When words form a sentence of death, that feels like it's a reference to the scroll itself. Through these words, I will summon forth the forces of Oblivion to be the death of my enemies or the world, or it depends on how evil the person is who put the scroll together and what they're trying to achieve. But if the day of Oblivion, and this is capitalized, day of Oblivion is indeed at hand, that sentence right there feels like a premonition of the events of the Elder Scrolls Oblivion to me.
Yeah.
This, I mean, this feels, yeah, like, is this Menkar Cameron? Is this the Mythic Dawn? Are these people from the, is this like an early version of the Mythic Dawn and the beginnings of that, I don't know, that belief system, that cult?
Right. Yeah. It's hard to say because it seems like it's, to your point, it sounds like it's predicting the events of the Elder Scrolls 4. So,
and trying to will them into existence.
Right. So you would assume that it would be from somebody directly related to that cult that is trying to bring this to prominence.
Right, right. And so, but if the day of Oblivion is indeed at hand, servants of the dark, obey me. The idea that they want to control the invasion, they want to use the Daedric forces for their own benefits. And that, I mean, all, like, there are parts of this that are very vague, parts of it that might reference other Daedric princes, but when you take what seems to be the intention established at the top, some of the details, some of the colorful descriptions of the way this will go about, and then the willing, the command of those Daedric forces at the bottom, this very much feels like the Mythic Dawn. And it in does. The events of Daggerfall, we're way, I mean, it's not way before the events of Oblivion, but it's a considerable period of time difference.
Right. And the only other thing that I think is worth noting is because he is in Daggerfall pretty prominently and has been in the series quite frequently is, oh my God, why did I just space his name? The King of Worms. Good Lord.
Manny Marco.
Thank you. I was going to say, always kind of floating around there. So like he's pretty prominent in the series. So I just think it'd be funny if it's just like, you know, it's got something like that. And then, you know, you get the scroll and it's summons like a scamp or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just looked it back
scamp.
Up. Right. Right. Yeah. Just one scamp shows up and I'm going to command you. You are my forces. I just looked it up again just to make sure I was exactly sure about the dates. Arena is the third era, 399. Daggerfall is 405, only six years after Arena. Mm-hmm. Morrowind is 247, so 22 years after that. Oblivion is 433, 6 years after Morrowind. So the distance between Daggerfall and Oblivion is like 27 years. Or 28 years, if I'm doing the math right. 28 years. There's a big jump to Skyrim, which is another...
That's not, I will believe you.
It's another 200 years to Skyrim, but the distance between Daggerfall and Oblivion... Yeah, is within a span of a life. Some magic users live really, really long lives, but like just a common person's life, you know, 28 years or whatever that was, if I'm doing the math correctly in my head real quick. So this very well could have been Menkar Cameron from like Menkar Cameron's what, in his 50s or is he older than that?
Feasible. Like it's not, not sure he ever shows you his birth certificate.
I don't know. I feel like he comes across, well, I guess he could be really, really old. I don't know. I'm talking out of my butt on this one, but this could be Menkar Cameron. It feels like it could be somebody from the Mythic Dawn, something that.
For sure. For sure.
So there you go. That's the Bothdorji scroll. And I didn't look up the word Bothdorji specifically, but I don't think that there's any other reference to this. Okay, so here's what the UESP says about it. Head to the specific dungeon and find the scroll within. It will be guarded by a Daedra, usually a Daedroth. Kill the guardian, pick up the scroll. You will receive a notification that you have found the scroll employer's name wants. This is one of those scrolls that like, or the quest where it just fills in something.
Yes, it's just a procedurally generated, like this dude needs this, you go right. Get.
Right. So that doesn't really help with understanding who this is, who the Bothdorji are or any of that. But it is Daedric adjacent. A Daedroth shows up and there is some sort of quest that then is assigned to you because you picked up the scroll. So it feels very generic in its use in Daggerfall, but maybe by the time of Oblivion, you kind of flesh it back. You look backwards on it and goes, okay, it would make sense that this would come from some Mythic Dawn member or an adjacent cult that's very similar to that. I'm sure there are plenty of evil cults in the world that we don't even know about, but you know, the world is much bigger than the version of the world that we are able to see. So
yeah, we see a very limited portion of the series.
Absolutely. So there you go. Three more interesting books from Daggerfall. I don't know if next week, Lotus, it would make sense to continue doing Daggerfall. We've kind of worked through a lot of the most interesting bits.
Yeah, we'll have to see if there's any more interesting ones, even if they're shorter, we can do these with the little snippets just so that you still get like a full episode to listen
to.
But I'm not too sure. I mean, there's obviously plenty of interesting ones, but some we've kind of already covered in other episodes, be they fully about them or tangentially about them. I'll give it another browse through to make sure we didn't miss any that I think are totally poignant, or if anybody has any that you specifically like, oh, I'm amazed you haven't covered this one type of thing, feel free to let us know and we can specifically look at it. Because more often than not, we've had a couple topics actually sprout up from people suggesting it. So if we're missing a book that you're like, oh, I love this book, and we haven't already done something on it, that's totally fine too. I would like the direction because I don't think, I don't know. I'll have to run through them once more, make sure we got them all covered.
Yeah,
that we'll wanted to cover.
We'll double check. And it might be something you love that you find, or might be something you think is absolutely ridiculous and you want us to cover it. That's fun too.
We're trying to do a good variety of like, hey, this adds to lore, and this is just ridiculous sounding. Like, trying to get a good variety for everybody.
Yeah. Now, you might think the next game in the series that we would pull books from is Morrowind, but there were books in Battlespire. There are books in Redguard. So there might be some other books out there. And again, we haven't done the research on this yet, but there might be other books out there that only show up in one of those games that don't show up somewhere else that might have some really interesting insights or some weird and wacky lore that got redacted later on. Part of the fun of going back to the history of all these books is that they really show us a time and a place of the way the people, the team was and the lore was at that time and how things were written. And a lot of the stuff continues on. A lot of these books show up, once they show up in the series, they show up in every game since then or specific games since then when it makes sense. So we'll have to see because I'm interested. Off the top of my head, I don't know a whole lot about the Battlespire books or the Redguard books because those are not my primary experience in the game. So this should be fun.
The other thing too is there's almost like, I want to say two schools related to this too with the series, I feel. You have kind of like, even though he, you know, passed away earlier this year, Julien Le Fay, who helped create this, is like one of the original series creators. There's the games he was involved in. And then when Todd Howard kind of took over and it's like more modern day Bethesda was involved, it's kind of interesting to see some of the changes that have taken place. And there's, for lack of a better word, there's a kind of a vibe to the series with Julien Le Fay at the helm and a vibe to the series with Todd Howard at the helm.
Right. Right. And we're about to see that transition through Redguard and into Morrowind.
Yeah. Redguard is where that shift begins and goes onward from Morrowind past. But up until Battlespire, it was helmed by Julien Le Fay. So it's just, it's an interesting tonal shift, I think, is probably something that I've noticed when I went back to play the older games. I'm like, oh yeah, no, these definitely have a different tone to them. Each with benefits and negatives in their own way, but I was like, I love that the series is evolving like that. And it's interesting because you can kind of almost tell whose influence is controlling that game type of deal.
Right. And then you have Kirkbride, and Kirkbride's influence starts to emerge around the same time as Todd Howard. And it kind of grows like a little slightly before, if I recall correctly, but then definitely by Morrowind, things are very Kirkbridean.
Exactly. That's another thing is like, you know, the Kirkbride influence. And then you've got all these different ESOs had a whole bunch of lore masters and stuff like that. So it's like you've seen a lot of the flows with that. If you play the Elder Scrolls Online, because it's just a continuing thing. So because again, there's no one person that makes the series. There's very rarely one person that makes a video game. You just kind of know a figurehead oftentimes. But, you know, it's the team. You can kind of almost feel the transition of the team going through the series. And it's always got its direction and it's got its foundations there. But it is interesting to feel kind of the differences from who the people are behind the scenes crafting the world at the time.
Yeah, it's very cool. So we'll dig into more of that in future episodes. We have to go thank our patrons. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with a random page. And I just clicked it. Turns out it's another book, a really short one. So this will be fun to kind of pull this up and discuss it really, really briefly at the end of the show. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, we're back, and we have a brand new patron. Welcome to Ocho Bronson. Ocho! Ocho is my favorite Spanish number. What's your favorite Spanish number, Lotus?
Ocho also sounds good.
I love that. You can just yell Ocho. Ocho!
Ocho, that's true.
Ocho, welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you decided to sign up and join us. Thank you to everybody who supports the show. We really do appreciate it. And we have to shout out our Daedric Princes, Kira C, Hircine, Peter R, and Austin Brad, Austin B. I try to mute the last names, but sometimes I mess up. Austin B. Austin B, thank you for being here too. And we don't have any new reviews this week, so if you'd like to leave a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts, especially if it's in the US, I'll be able to read it out on a future episode of the show. But any of that stuff is extremely helpful. So if you've been enjoying the show and you haven't done something like that or commented on Spotify, any of that stuff, super helpful. All the positivity is wonderful, and it totally makes our weeks. So we really do appreciate that. But hey, Lotus, you ready for our random page?
I am. And also, just as a side note, you know, just because we didn't get worded reviews, we are at least on Spotify, which has now taken over Apple as the most listened to platform. It has for Tales too. Everybody yeah, Spotify
everywhere.
Is just very
yes.
convenient. Yeah. What do you call it? But we have almost 1,000 star ratings on Spotify.
That's amazing.
We're like
amazing.
992 or something like that. So thank you right. all for taking the time to even just click that. That's that does help. So it's just I know it even only takes like a couple seconds, but you don't have to do that, so it is still appreciated.
Yeah, really appreciate it. And a 4.7, which is pretty solid, so appreciate yeah. that. Thank you, everybody.
Most of you like us.
Yeah. The vast majority. Thank you so much. All right, so this is the random page. This comes from Elder Scrolls Online. It is a book, and it's called The Unholy Temple, ancient text regarding glowing hostility between two alien city-states. And this is brief. It's just three quick or four little quick little paragraphs. So yeah. I'll just read it real fast. The king is furious. Construction of our magnificent temple was completed several months ago. At that time, we dispatched an emissary to the city of Delodil with two eyes before the L. There's so many times they add two I's in things.
I know. The duplicate letters.
Yeah, it's good. The invitation to view our seat of power was extended with an open hand, a chance for the heretics to make a pilgrimage and at last bow to the master. Today, the response arrived from the so-called King of Delodil, condescendingly dismissing our invitation. He called our temple pitiful and mocked our craftsmen and our master. This cannot be borne. Father has entered the temple of the heart, and even from here I can hear his rage as he shouts to the master for aid to wipe his humiliation away. Father is furious, but I am filled with joy. This affront must end in war. This insult must end in death. So much death. Well, aliens looking for death in gut gardens seems to be the key here. So
yeah,
there you go.
Thing. I love that death in gut gardens.
Yep. This is related to the prismatic core. I'm sure this is part of a quest line and all of that stuff going on in ESO. So there you go. That's our, Fighters Guild faction stuff. I don't remember
That was sufficiently random.
Yeah, pretty random. Not super weird, but another one of those texts that shows up and kind of fills in a little bit of details. So that's pretty cool. So there you go. Lotus, we got to wrap it up. Anything else you want to share? Anything else going on with Tales of Tamriel before we go?
We are basically like, we've been trying to record all week because we like hit our 2-week thing. And I got the newest ESO expansion on console. So we've been eager to talk about it, but scheduling has been a nightmare. So the goal is, I think, when you're hearing this, the following day, we're probably recording Tales. So
nice. So soon. You're saying it's soon.
Yes. Yeah. Soon, TM. So that's the goal, because we're actually on our third week. We try to do biweekly, and we're definitely not. We're currently in week 3. So we're going to try to fix that this weekend so that we can chat about all the new stuff, because they also had PTS notes. So a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Including the segment that people jokingly asked us to bring back, and we did. Does anybody remember the game Elder Scrolls Castles? Let's just say we fired them back up, and due to popular demand, we're bringing the segment back where each show we don't play the game because neither of us really liked it all that much. And then the game continues on without you. Let's just say it's a fun new adventure every time you go back in, and the castle is just completely untended for 2 weeks.
Nice. All right. That sounds awesome. Also, I can't wait to get your take on ESO and what's going on and things that are coming out.
Yeah, yes.
That sounds awesome, too.
Big stuff on the horizon.
Very cool. And of course, there's my stuff. If you're into Fallout, the Fallout Lorecast, we've been speculating about season two. One of the most recent episodes, I went with our patrons. We went through and went like scene by scene through the trailer and talked about it and what we think might be happening in season two. Yeah, it's going to be super good. So if you want more info on that, check out the Fallout Lorecast. There's the Lord of the Rings Lorecast and my new secret project, which is getting very close. I've been already working on the first two episodes and it's going to be great. And it's going to be video first, which requires a lot of editing, a lot more foresight than talking into a microphone with your friend. So I'm excited about it. I'll have more to reveal probably in the next 2 weeks is the hope. But lots of stuff on the horizon, all sorts of fun stuff at robotsradio.net, especially if you're looking for just other shows about video games and nerd culture stuff, lots of hosts, all sorts of things. So come join us for all that stuff. And until next time, if Boethia gives you a shield and you end up having to fight a dragon, then maybe don't use the shield, to just rely on your wits instead, because that works out better.
Yeah, but you can just get a cheap knockoff replica in a different game.
yeah. And hey, we just got raided. Thank you. Was it Avron? Oh, Avron, so thank you for the raid. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
Yeah, you just caught the very end of the show. We were just wrapping it up. But yeah, go check out Avron Doodles on Twitch.
He's
and
the best.
That community over there. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the stream. Thanks for being here, everyone. All right. Well, until next time, stay safe out there, and we'll see you somewhere in Tamriel. Bye, everybody.
See you later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.